Civil Justice Committee will come to order. Representative Scott moves the minutes of March 19th. All in favor, say aye.
Aye.
All opposed, no. Carries. Representative Sterner, can you come up? Yeah, well, as briefly, these are two bills that we're going to hear informationally because we needed to look at them, but we don't need to vote on them. And so Representative Sterner, would you just go ahead and explain your bill to everybody?
Sure. Yeah, thank you very much, Chair Mueller. Appreciate members of the committee. Thanks for having me here tonight. My House File 2060 bill, what it has is it kind of helps stop aggressive practices of roofing contractors and people that do roofs on residential buildings and that. What we have a kind of a huge problem with we have a really high property loss in the state of Minnesota, where we're second to only Louisiana, the number of dollars paid out of catastrophic losses. And we also have, it's estimated as many as 70% of the roofs have been replaced that didn't need to be replaced in that. So it's caused a lot of homeowners' premiums to go up. And a lot of the local contractors aren't getting the business because they have aggressive contractors, many from out of states, that are getting the work before our local contractors can get the work.
Okay, thank you. Is there anybody have any questions on this?
How do they get a license in this state if they're that bad a contractor?
Representative Sterner.
Well, I need municipal codes to deal with it.
Licensure, all right. Maybe but basically, I mean, sometimes they get licensed, but a lot of times what's happened is many people that are in the marketing part of the business, not licensed adjusters or contractors, are stating that there's damage to the roofs. There's not enough teeth, into the law to be able to keep that practice from happening.
Representative Scott, please.
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chair. What happens if there's a partial claim?
President Stern.
Thank you, Representative Mulder and President Scott. Basically, the partial claims would be set like they normally would. You know, so if there's ice damage or some shingles made that wouldn't affect it, you'd still have your deductible like you'd have with insurance and that, and it wouldn't affect the claim. It just would be you'd pay your deductible first.
President Scott.
I'm sorry, I probably didn't make myself very clear, but what if, you know, they do the paperwork, the roofing contractor and the insured, and the insurance company says they're only going to pay for part of the claim?
Oh, okay. Okay. Thank you. Like, if part of the practices, like if it's actual cash value on the roof, or you mean like the amount of, if you don't have replacement cost, or just if it's a, like the payment is made partially because.
Mr. Chair, if the insurance company denies partially a part of the claim.
Representative Sterner.
Okay.
Would the contract then have to be rewritten? Or?
Well, generally what happens is that the contract, if they deny part of it, it's either because there was no damage to that part of the roof, or maybe there was prior damage before. But typically the homeowner would just carry that part of the damage like they normally would, or they wouldn't have to replace that part of the roof in that. So I don't know if I'm getting at your question, Representative Scott.
What do you think, Mr. Chair? Now, obviously, you've never tried to replace a half of a roof and try to match the shingles, but I got a question. What are you doing on page 2?
Page 2.
Cancellation. I hereby cancel this transition transaction.
Page 2 under the notice of cancellation. Basically, what that's allowing to do is we went to 72 hours. What's happening is many of these contractors are having a statement, and people think they're getting assigned for an estimate, and what's reality, they're not getting an estimate, they're actually signing a contract. So it's allowing a 72-hour window. It shows 48 on the original bill, but 72 hours is what the provision is going to be. It's allowing time to be able to get out of the contract if the homeowner so desires.
Mr. Chair and Representative Sterner, is that the size of the type? Is it one single page by itself? Is it a different color page? I would tell you that you should talk to Representative Dabney or myself. We'll sit down and we can some of those things you got to make so big that they, it's kind of like hitting somebody with a 2x4. You do have the right to cancel this. And I don't think yours is highlighted enough for people to see.
Okay.
Sterling, can you work on that?
Okay, I can kind of look into that, but usually there is some of the provision on the you know, papers that will have that, you know, in the contract, but I can take a look at, see if we can change some of that.
Okay, seeing nothing else, we'll take an informal vote, which is technically not official. All in favor, say aye.
Aye.
All opposed, no. Okay. Thank you.
All right, thank you, Chair Molly. Members of the committee.
Can we take an official vote? No.
No.
No. When she scratched my glasses off.
Clean your glasses.
She scratches on them.
You couldn't see straight.
Representative Jackson, just go ahead. We don't have to formally move it.
Great. All right. Well, this bill would prohibit private transfer fees. And I hadn't heard of the concept myself, despite being in real estate law for 25 years, but it's one more clever way of trying to make a buck that plenty of folks in Minnesota, including our builders, our developers, our realtors, our title people, and our bar association all oppose. And private transfer fees work like this. It's common for developers to have protective covenants. And those protective covenants might be anything from regulating the square foot of any buildings or houses within the development. Might be limitations on the uses, the number of, you know, outdoor animals, the color and type of siding and roof. There are all sorts of things that can be covenants. But this is kind of a new twist. This covenant would allow the original developer to have a portion of the purchase price of every subsequent sale of that property for up to the lifetime of covenants, which according to the title standards is 30 years. And it gets better. This stream of risky but potential income in other states is being bundled and sold, much like those subprime mortgages were. It's something that buyers are unaware of. We are aware of one in Carver County that has been filed, but there are 43 other states that the National Realtors have reported these are in, and the movement is afoot already. Six states have already said, we don't want to do this. And, you know, there is a reason that local developers don't like it. Picture, if you will, a partial development done. You do the platting, maybe you've got the sidewalks and the curb, and either you go under for whatever reason, you sell it. And now you're handing it to a redeveloper or a builder who now is making the capital investment in that property but has to pay a portion of it to the guy he bought it from at the sale. And when he sells it, the new buyer and that buyer and that buyer and that buyer. So this bill would prohibit them going forward and would also put some limits on enforceability if there's not good notice for anything existing, but like I said, we know of one. So I stand for questions, and I have Christine Berger from the Minnesota Realtors here, Kevin Dunleavy of the Real Estate Section of the Bar Association.
I have a question. Did you say you know of one in Minnesota?
Carver County.
Carver County, okay.
Yeah.
Ms. Berger, go ahead.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, thank you very much for this hearing this evening. We're very grateful. Representative Clerk Jackson did a phenomenal job of describing what the bill does, how these work. I'll just add, passing this bill would protect the consumer. These private transfer fees create title problems. If there's not a clean title, there's going to be lending problems. You can't get a loan if you've got title problems. And so there's transferability problems. There's a whole slew of problems with these bills. And so we urge your support to pass this bill. Thank you very much.
Mr. Dunleavy?
I'm Kevin Dunleavy, and I co-chair the Legislative Committee of the Real Property Section of the State Bar Association. And my committee, the Legislative Committee, and the Real Property Council, which is the governing body of the Real Property Section, both voted unanimously to oppose transfer fees in Minnesota. And so we support this legislation. Part of the reasons that the real estate attorneys dislike it is because restrictive covenants typically, there's a, I think, a common law requirement that they should touch and concern the land, that they should have something to do with the real estate. And Representative Kulik Jackson gave examples of some of those things, like the color of the siding on the house and whether or not you can have a kennel and things like that. That has to do with the land itself, whereas this attempt to create a restrictive covenant doesn't have anything to do with the land. The people in the future that are selling the property and buying the property are just paying a fee, and it doesn't have anything to do with the real estate itself. And also, like Ms. Berger said, it does, it will create future title problems. 20 years from now, how are you going to pay the fee? How are you going to know where the person is that you're supposed to pay the fee to? How is the fee enforced? Does it get foreclosed like a mortgage? Is it a judgment? We don't know these things. And also, the American College of Real Estate Attorneys has come out against these transfer fees and has passed some model legislation similar, but actually I think this bill is better than the model legislation that the American College of Real Estate Attorneys has drafted on this topic.
I think in this era, when we have enough challenges to our real estate markets, we certainly don't need one other thing that's going to affect people's ability to sell property and be one more, in some cases, you know, unknown cost.
Is there any questions on this? Okay, I passed out the A1 amendment, which I'll briefly discuss, which I'm still working as far as whether or not I'll offer that later, which would declare that it's harmful to the general welfare and contrary to the public interest and therefore is invalid, even the ones already created. And I've talked to Mark Shepard about it. He thinks we can do that. There's some people that don't think we can, and so I'm working on that issue because I don't think it's good to have that, even the ones that are in existence. Representative Mahoney?
Well, I'll wait till you're done. You done?
Oh, yeah, go ahead.
43 other states have this? Is that what you said, or 41?
These have shown up. These private transfer fees have shown up in a total of 43 states.
Mr. Chair. So then to the attorney, so it's never been used in any of those 40 other some odd states? They've never done it? So you would have no idea how they would follow that in a title transfer?
Representative, or Mr. Dunleavy, not
Representative. I don't know how they're doing it in other states, to be honest with you. I do know that that other states have enacted legislation to prohibit them.
Right. She said, Representative Jackson said six, so I'm going to assume that, but that leaves 37 or 35. I'm not sure which number we were working with. So what are the 35 other states doing? Are they actually using this?
I don't know if they're successfully using them in other states. I think what they would probably do, if I was going to try to enforce one of these things, it would have to say something in the document about how they can enforce it.
Okay. Mr. Chair?
Ms. Representative Mahoney.
Ms. Berger or Ms. Representative Jackson, have these been used in other states at all?
Ms. Berger.
Mr. Chair, Representative Mahoney, the private transfer fees are a relatively new occurrence at all. Just they have a recent development, if you will, and so they kind of spread like wildfire, and so now states are slowly trying to catch up and start to prohibit them. So I guess, you know, people have been trying to impose them in other states, but then the states, the governing bodies, are trying to prohibit them.
Okay. So, Representative Jackson.
Well, my guess is there'd be a private cause of action. You know, it would, if it were my case, I would just get real creative, I guess, about drafting my pleadings. But, you know, that in and of itself is a big, fat problem. I just think they're bad on so many different levels. Anything that creates unjust enrichment, anything that slows down our ability to transfer property, anything that is going to prohibit or disincent a builder to renovate a property and sell it because he's got to give a chunk to some guy three owners ago. That all just gets in the way of us moving forward, and it's something that that, you know, we have pretty strong agreement among people who are building, developing, selling, realtors, attorneys. So that's my guess how they would do it, unless, but I haven't seen the other statutes, so maybe they are real, maybe they prescribe some specific form of making a claim on it, but there are general causes of action in real estate when you've got rights.
Representative Mahoney.
So back to my first question, or actually the question.
Mm-hmm.
Do you know, have they ever been done in another state? And if they have been done in another state, has someone actually written a check to the first owner, given it to them, and then applied it to the abstract or the torrent title or whatever thing you're moving along on? As I'm trying to find out is, has this ever been done? Because it really sounds like a scam. But, you know, I got a piece of property I could put a covenant on.
Yeah.
I'm cool with that for the next 100 years. It could be my inheritance to my children. So, has it ever been used? And if so, has it ever been put onto the title and someone cut a check to the second owner, first sure. owner, two owners later?
Representative Jackson.
What's that?
Question.
Personally, I don't know, but a bigger danger is not just the collecting in the future, but when you securitize them, just like with those subprime mortgages, when you bundle them up and you sell them, my guess is Representative Scott, in any real estate deal where you were working with subprime mortgages and you're trying to even find out who's servicing it, if you want to amend your covenants, who do you get your consent from? It gets really, really impossible, and 25 years down the line, you may be so many steps removed that it's going to be difficult to even find out who you're supposed to be paying. So has there been a cause of action? If they're relatively new, maybe not yet, but it's only a matter of time. And so we can sit back and wait for it, you know, to happen here. But when we see that the door has been opened and we know it's a real bad instrument and a real bad idea, I think it's our opportunity to cut them off now.
Representative Mahoney.
So you just don't like attorneys collecting fees?
It's not attorneys. Well, okay. No, keeping in mind, too, that the statute is really clear about what fees are not considered private transfer fees. Attorneys' fees and closers' fees, realtors' commissions, the government transfer fees, that sort of thing. That's not what we're talking about. The normal fees that we want. Yeah, and we don't need any more reason for any more lawsuits either. So yeah, it opens up a whole cause of action that we don't need to walk down that road either.
Representative Jackson, we don't need more lawsuits.
That's right, Chair Mullery.
Boy, you'll be thrown out of the bar association. Does the 30-year statute apply to this? Does it?
Well, generally speaking, that's the title standard that examiners apply to covenants.
So it would apply.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Well, actually,
Mr. Dunleavy,
Representative Chairman Mullery, I'm not really sure that it applies. I think it applies. I mean, these things are trying to be restrictive covenants, and the 30-year statute applies to restrictive covenants. But a restrictive covenant really does. It's to deal with how you use the property. It's the kind of stuff like, can you have a kennel? Can you have a purple siding on your house when everybody else has whatever, some other color? So I don't really know for sure. I certainly would take that position. If I was in litigation, I'd take that position that it's that it applies. This is real estate fraud. The way there's an expression that it starts in California. It's invented in California. It's refined in Florida, then it's exported to the rest of the country from Texas. This is in Texas right now, and it's happening very quickly, and so as far as I know, there aren't any reported cases on it. There may be some litigation in district courts, in the trial courts in other states, but I don't know about any reported cases yet. So I don't know how the courts are going to deal with this.
Could you enforce this like the same way they do with a condo requirements or something?
Chairman Mullery, I think that's what they're trying to do, but I don't really know. I don't know if that's how it will work.
Okay. Any other questions? Okay. Again, it's an informal vote. All in favor, say aye.
Aye.
All opposed, no. So,
thank you,
Representative
Clady.
Jackson. Thanks. That's
I do want to hear more tomorrow night in finance.
I'm not, nothing on this. I'll just move your minutes if you haven't already done it.
Oh, we did that.
You did it? Okay, I was out.
Okay, the meeting's adjourned. Thank you.